You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. It's our pledge drive show. Tonight's show is being underwritten by United Steelworkers District 11 and Roofers Local 20. United Steelworkers District 11, representing 35,000 members in the Midwest, protecting worker rights and organizing the unorganized. We support union-made products. And Roofers Local 20 apprenticeship provides the highest quality roof applicators in the region. Accredited by the United States Department of Labor's Bureau of Apprenticeship Training, our program provides Local 20 contractors with a workforce second to none. Craftsmanship and quality is what we do on time and within budget is how we do it. For more information on roofer apprenticeships, call 913-281-2527. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, we'll find out what's cooking in the Missouri and Kansas legislatures. Missouri Representative Wes Rogers and Kansas Senator Tom Holland will provide a menu of good bills and bad affecting working people, Medicaid expansion, and other issues. And stay tuned to find out if you're on the menu. In the news, can a bipartisan group of Missouri legislators stop Parson from making the unemployed return excess payments? And a Black History Month special on how workers at Armour Meatpacking Plant in the 1930s overcame segregation to win a union. Our feature at the end of the show is Know Your Rights with Angie Williams. Now for the news. The biggest news this week is that it's pledge drive night at our pledge drive week at KKFI. And if you're a regular listener to the show, if you like the Heartland Labor Forum, or just if you like KKFI, we'd really appreciate it if you call in and make a pledge. We have a match, which I am daring all of you to contribute up to $100. That's our match. You can double your money. We also want to thank Charlie Taylor. Keep up the good work, he says, to KKFI. Thank you very much, Charlie. So call us at 888-931-0901 to make a pledge, or you can go online at kkfi.org. And the news is going to be a little different tonight. It's Black History Month, and some of us at KKFI have been contributing stories from Black history. Here's a story that's old news. It's a story from Kansas City labor history. This is a KKFI Black History Moment. Many people know that Kansas City used to have a large meatpacking industry. Few remember that from the 1880s, the industry was integrated, even though Kansas City was a most segregated town. My source is Roger Horowitz's Negro and White Unite and Fight. In the 1930s, meatpacking was our largest employer, and blacks were a quarter of the workforce. Meatpacking was a hard, sometimes brutal job, especially if you were black and got the worst ones. But it was one of the best paying available. Jobs at Ford or in steel or chemicals didn't hire blacks, so many were grateful for the job and loyal to the company and anti-union. But in the Depression 1930s, the packers laid off 25% of the workers, and racist supervisors targeted black workers for dismissal. Black workers' attitudes began to change. In 1935, a homegrown socialist named Charles Fisher, a white guy who worked at Armour, began to organize. How to create unity in a plant where each racial and ethnic group had different jobs was the challenge. He knew organizing black workers was key. They controlled the kill floor, which was strategic in the event of a strike. What the workers needed was an inclusive union. Fisher brought together former coal miners, Croatians, and other Eastern European immigrants and their adult sons and daughters, who, like the blacks, faced discrimination from the supervisors, who were Irish or German in background, and called the Croatians hunkies. It was mainly the Croatians who recruited black workers and convinced them that this union didn't discriminate. The union came out of the shadows and started waging shop floor actions against despotic bosses. They also organized social gatherings used to recruit workers and involve families. They drew on ethnic and black musicians and all partied at the Croatian Fraternal Union on Strawberry Hill. Everybody sat together, which was unheard of in segregated Kansas City. In 1937, the workers voted to join the Packing House Workers Organizing Committee, Local 37. But on September 9, 1938, when Armour managers refused to pay four black and one Croatian shop steward for time spent attending a grievance meeting, the union called a sit-down strike and occupied the plant. 400 black and 600 white workers spent 4 days eating, sleeping, and jointly planning strategy until they won recognition and respect. The unity forged in that strike lasted decades and really paid off for the workers. This has been a KKFI Black History Moment, and I'm Judy Ansel, a producer of the Heartland Labor Forum.
The Special Committee on Government Oversight last week heard a bipartisan collection of bills seeking to block Governor Mike Parson's administration from clawing back as much as $150 million in excess unemployment payments it made to an estimated 46,000 Missourians who lost their jobs in the past year due to the pandemic. The Missouri Department of Labor and Industrial Relations has admitted that 97.7% of the overpayments did not involve fraud and instead resulted from mistakes made by the department. The overpayments largely came from federal pandemic funds, and the Federal Department of Labor has authorized states to waive repayment from people who, through no fault of their own, received benefits that they shouldn't have. Governor Parson, however, has insisted any overages be repaid, even though doing so would cause substantial hardships to thousands of unemployed Missourians who have little or no ability to do so. Most of the bills before the committee would prohibit the state labor department from seeking repayment from those who acted in good faith. Those who acted fraudulently would still have to repay the money and face potential penalties, including criminal penalties.
And this from The Guardian. On Tuesday, workers at fast food restaurants chains in 15 cities around the U.S. went on strike, demanding a raise in their minimum wage to $15 an hour. The workers at McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's, joined by home care and nursing home workers, took action as the Biden administration is attempting to push through an increase in the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to what would be the first increase since 2009. Strikes occurred in Charleston, South Carolina, Chicago, Flint, and Detroit, Michigan, Raleigh and Durham, North Dakota, Houston, Miami, Orlando, and Tampa, Florida, St. Louis, Oakland, Sacramento, and San Jose, California, and Milwaukee. And although The Guardian missed us, Kansas City as well, where fast food workers were joined by home care and nursing home workers despite snow, ice, and record cold temperatures. The strike occurred while the Senate considers taking the $15 minimum out of President Biden's COVID relief bill in order to win support from West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin and Arizona's Kristen Sinema, who oppose its inclusion in the bill. One senator who opposes raising the minimum wage is Missouri's Senator Roy Blunt. The strikers tried to pay him a visit at his office downtown on Tuesday, but according to Stand Up KC, when demonstrators tried to enter, security guards literally shoved them out the door, locked it, and called the police. That's the news from our side. The news tonight was read by Jen Zaman, and I'm Judy Ansel.
Thanks. Remember, in the end, nobody wins unless everybody wins.
Come on!
One time!
The day we sweat out on the streets of a runaway American dream. At night we ride through mansions of glory. Suicide machines run from cages on highway lines. Your wheel feel rejected, stepping out of line. Whoa, maybe this town rips the bones from your back to death trap.
Judy Morgan, who recently termed out of the Missouri House, and myself, Tom Gepkin, a member of CWA 6360, will be hosting this show, discussing what's happening in Missouri and Kansas capitals. Tonight we have Wes Rogers. He was recently elected to his second term representing Missouri House District 18. He is a lawyer and a small business owner. This gives him a unique insight into the needs of his constituents in the northern part of Kansas City, where he lives with his wife and three children. The committees he serves on in the House are agriculture, general laws, special committee on gaming, and joint committee on agriculture. Wes, I want to welcome you to the Heartland Labor Forum.
Hey, Wes, yes, this
thank
is
you so much.
No, you're welcome. This is Judy Morgan, and I'm going to ask you about the initiative petition process first, something that's near and dear to my heart. So our state has a very strong initiative petition process that is enshrined in our state constitution. And if the people decide that they don't like what the legislature has passed, or if they want to change the state constitution, or if they're even tired of the legislature refusing to pass good policy, they can do so by gathering signatures on a petition. And if they get enough signatures, the issue goes on the ballot for the people to decide. In the past 15 years, the people have placed a number of issues on the ballot: raising the minimum wage, defeating right to work, instituting ethics reform, legislating medical marijuana for certain medical conditions, and most recently, expanding Medicaid. So for the last couple of years, when I was there, the Republican majority in Jeff City has been filing bills that would weaken our initiative petition process and make it more difficult for the people to put issues on the ballot. And last year, over 20 bills were filed to weaken the process, and none of them made it across the legislative finish line. And I know bills have already been filed this year. So Representative Rogers, what bills have been filed? What's contained in the legislation? And do you think it's a priority for the Republicans to pass some kind of weakening of the initiative petition process this year?
Yes. So unfortunately, it's February the 10th, so this week, the Elections Committee heard 11 different Republican-sponsored measures that would make it more difficult for Missourians to amend the state constitution through the initiative petition process. And, you know, we've used this process over the last several years to enact Medicaid expansion, to increase the minimum wage, to impose clean Missouri ethics reform. And these are ideas that Medicaid expansion was close, but these are ideas that passed overwhelmingly a lot of the times with voters, yet are just not very popular amongst the folks elected to the General Assembly. So it's a really powerful way. I like to joke with my friends that it's a way for Missourians to have both the lawmakers they want and the laws that they want.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing is we're peeling that back this session so far. There's three proposed constitutional amendments that we heard in committee last week, and I'm not on this committee, but we were all watching it really close, that would increase the number of signatures required to put initiative measures on the ballot. There's one that would change the fee and raise it up to $500 just to submit an initiative petition. It may or may not end up on the ballot at all. So historically, it's only required a simple majority to amend the Constitution. And besides those three I just discussed, there are seven more proposals by Republicans to change the constitutional amendments that would raise the bar past a simple majority Some has it as a supermajority. Some has it a three-fifths majority, two-thirds majority. But there's just a major push to make it harder to amend the Constitution, which would have prevented a lot of these popular measures from becoming law.
So Representative Rogers, do you think there's much appetite in the legislature with the Republican leadership to actually get one of these measures passed this year? I know that I was on the elections committee and we heard those kind of bills, but generally we were able to stop it. Do you think that we're going to be able to stop it this year?
You spend more time in the legislature than I did, so I would appreciate your perspective on this. But it makes me really nervous when we're hearing something year after year after year. And this is my third year here, and it seems that this is gaining some momentum. So when there's 11 bills filed and we're in week three and we've already heard all of them, it makes me really nervous that they may actually get something done this year. The good news, though, and I can't stress that this is good news, is it's still a constitutional amendment, so they would still have to take it to the voters, and the voters would still have to decide whether or not they want to change it or not.
I do remember one of the witnesses who is actually a very conservative kind of guy last year actually said he thought the voters would never, ever give up their ability to change the Constitution. So he thought if it went to a ballot, we would win. So hopefully if it goes to the ballot, we'll win.
Yeah, you got to like our chances in that situation because we're the ones that are trying to leave the power with the voters.
For years, the Republican-controlled legislature has attacked labor. Even though voters overwhelmingly defeated Right to Work in 2018, they still keep coming back with anti-labor legislation not wanted by the citizens of Missouri. For the 2021 session, what bills have been introduced and where do you expect them to go?
So this is the closest thing I'm going to say to good news. We defeated Right to Work so soundly and so recently that I really think that they're a little bit afraid of it. I really don't think they want to go there. So there are two bills that have been filed. One is just a straight up Right to Work like we went through in 2018. But that has not been referred yet to committee. And it's just very hard for me to imagine they've got any appetite at this point to take that back on. So hopefully that stays where it is. There's another bill that is filed by Representative Roan down in Southeast Missouri that would create Right to Work by county. And Right to Work did better in that part of the state than it did in most of the rest of the state. I know other states have tried that same approach too, to kind of backdoor their way into Right to Work. And then once a majority of counties have Right to Work, then we would become a Right to Work state. So the good news in that one also does not have a committee hearing yet either. So I mean, if I was a betting man, I would think we're okay there, but obviously we've got to be diligent. The good news is the voters just so overwhelmingly rejected this that I do think we're okay, at least for the next couple of years. And Representative Morgan, I'd be curious what you think about that too.
I would tend to agree with you because we really beat back Right to Work by, I think it was close to 2/3 that we beat it back by. So it was really a great victory for organized labor, I think. So I agree with you on that. But one other I'm really worried about is public education. And I know that every year that I was in the legislature since 2012, we dealt with assaults on public education. And the House Standing Committee on Elementary and Secondary Ed has already heard a bill, I think it was House Bill 349, that would allow the use of taxpayer dollars to pay for tuition at private and religious schools. So I was wondering what was facing public education during this year's legislative session, and if you think any bills that would allow for either expansion of charter schools or school vouchers would pass this year.
So that we talked about a little bit of good news on Right to Work. Here's the bad news. Of all of the things that I fear this session, it's passing some really significant school reform that I don't think is necessary at all. And, you know, the Speaker of the House came out hard charging in his opening speech and talked about education reform and talked about how much he thinks that we need it. And there's been senators that were been very vocal about it and some of the new senators, too, that have been vocal about it, potentially on both sides of the aisle over there. So, I mean, I'm deeply worried that we could end up with charter school expansion this year or some form of vouchers, some form of school choice. I mean, these bills are flying all over the place. And I'm on the Rules Committee, which – the Legislative Oversight Rules Committee, which is the gap between a standing committee and before it hits the House of the floor. And we've already heard two pretty significant education reform bills already. We haven't heard a straight up expansion bill, a charter expansion bill yet, but I do think they're coming. From what I understand, they think they might have the votes, and it seems like we hear that every year, and then they fizz away. The good news is the education, the traditional education lobby is strong. It's well organized. They're right on the issues. They know how to dig in and fight because they've been on defense. I'm 38 years old now. I think they've been on defense the entire time I've been alive. So
you're probably right.
And yeah, and so we'll put up a good fight like we always do. And for somebody like me with three little kids, it's really personal. When you know, I think literally generations of my family have grown up going to really strong Missouri public schools, and I just don't know why we're trying to change what I think is a very good thing.
I know in the past, I felt like the education lobby, like you said, did a very good job. And I think that the way they did a good job is they actually reached out across the aisle to Republicans, not just Democrats, but to Republicans. And we did have support from Republicans to support public education. Do you think that's still there? Do you think we still?
Yeah, it's definitely still there. The question is how much. And we have, you know, we got one of the bigger freshman class this year than we had last year. So I don't have a feel for how they feel about things, but I get the feeling that maybe they're more pro charter than what we've dealt with because we're coming out so fast on some of these issues. But I do want to take a minute to compliment, you know, there are a lot of retired teachers in the Republican caucus from rural Missouri, and we may not agree on every issue, but they really do believe in a traditional Missouri education for students. And when it's time to fight for traditional schools, they will. So that group of people is certainly still here. I just don't know what the overall numbers look like yet. And I think that I get the feeling that the Republicans are still trying to figure that out too.
Hopefully we'll be successful and beat it back another year.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. I have a question just about charter schools. How much charter school expansion are we looking at to cover the whole state, move it to the suburbs, or what are they thinking?
So, and I'll defer to Representative Morgan on this a little bit because these are the same bills that we've been hearing the last several years. But there's a couple of different ways you can do it. One is changing the way that you determine whether or not a school is, whether a school is accredited, and some of these partially accredited school districts would open up. So what they would do is they would accredit fewer schools. There'd be more schools that are partially accredited and open up charters or school choice in those areas. The other one is opening up charter schools in charter counties. The bottom line is I think they would be targeting St. Louis County first. And for what's near and dear to me is after St. Louis County would probably be suburban Kansas City and the rest of suburban St. Louis. So pretty much any bill I have seen that includes charter school expansion would probably include North Kansas City School District, which I represent, which is, you know, Winnetonka Staley High School, North Kansas City High School, and Oak Park High School. And then if you get into North Kansas City, then you just start peeling off some of these other suburban districts too. So it's hard for me to envision that's not the ultimate goal. And you know, the examples that I always like to use, and Representative Morgan's much more of a subject matter expert on this than I am. But, you know, we had a couple of poor performing schools in the North Kansas City School District several years ago. And the argument they say that is pro-charter is, okay, well, if we basically privatize that, then we would do a better job than the public schools. Well, what our public schools did was they realized that they needed to do better. So they went to year-round school and test scores immediately went up. The kids, you know, were healthier. The kids were safer during the day. The parents had an easier time going to work. So this idea that we need charters to do different things, it's hard for me to buy into that because we already did different things in North Kansas City. And we already have, you know, an IB program for our high school students. We've already got, you know, kids in actual jobs, you know, going to the hospital and learning what it's like to be a nurse or a computer programmer. So any of this stuff that they're saying charter schools can't bring to the school district, it's frustrating for me because frankly, North Kansas City schools are already doing that as well or better as someone else is going to do. So again, we've had a long history of strong Missouri public education. And I see it every day when I go visit our schools and our students and our teachers. And I don't see why we're in such a rush to change that.
We're talking with Missouri House District 18 Representative Wes Rogers, and he's talking on the Heartland Labor Forum. Well, Wes, in August, the voters passed Medicaid expansion. This bill brings a lot of federal money into the state and brings much needed access to health care for Missourians. Would you discuss this, and are there any attempts to dismantle it, or and are they going to fund it?
So like so many people that we know and align with, I was very much in favor of Medicaid expansion. This is going to give access to medical care to literally hundreds of thousands of Missourians. It will keep rural hospitals open. It'll give more people in the cities access to health care. And the best part about it is the federal government is going to pay for most of this. So it's just a really good thing. The fear in the beginning when it passed was that the majority party would not honor it in the budget. The governor came out and said that he would honor it. And thus far in the budget process, everything we have seen so far is that they plan on finding money in the budget for Medicaid expansion. You know, philosophically, and I think the data speaks for itself in the 40 some other states that have already passed Medicaid expansion, is it will not only pay for itself, but it will actually eventually lead to a budget surplus. But there's definitely fear from the other side that they're going to have to find money in the budget for it. So I think the short-term fear is that other essential pieces of our government will be cut because they feel like they have to do that to pay for Medicaid expansion. I haven't seen that to be true in any other state. But the bottom line is they're going to do it. That's a good thing. It's going to give more people health care, and it's going to keep our hospitals open.
It's good to hear that they're thinking about putting it in the budget. I'm glad to hear that, because I was worried they might try to stonewall it. So that's good news. That's good news. Just a question a little bit about the earning tax, and we're getting close to being out of time, but we've dealt with this before. Businesses and those people who live in the Kansas City, Missouri area, and those who work in Kansas City, Missouri, pay a 1% tax on their earnings. And this results in about $270 million in funds that go to the city budget of Kansas City. That's about 44% of their budget. This pays for our police, our fire protection, and other city services. And obviously, we have a lot of public employee union members that are among the police, fire protection, and city services. So the Missouri legislature passed a law back in 2011 that requires the citizens of both KCMO and St. Louis, which has the same thing, St. Louis City, to put their earnings tax to a vote of the citizens every 5 years. We've approved it overwhelmingly in both Kansas City and St. Louis in 2011 and 2016, but it's up for a vote again in April of 2021. So my question is, have you seen any appetite in the Missouri legislature this session for eliminating the earnings tax in Kansas City and St. Louis City, or significantly altering it?
Yeah, there will be. There's bills filed on that. And again, that's, I think, something that's got to go to the voters, but it's coming. We're going to be fighting it again. And, you know, for those of us that live in Kansas City, and including me, it's just, you know, it's the way that we pay for our government. It's the way that we pay, like you said, for fire and police and a lot of other things that we have. And the biggest issue there is it's not like we're just going to get a tax break if we stop financing our government this way. The city will have to find that money from other places. And Kansas City being a place where there are so many commuters coming in and out, both from the Kansas side and from people who don't live in the city of Kansas City that are Missourians, you know, they're not going to pay their fair share if we don't use this tax. So it's either tax yourselves or ask other folks who are using our services to pitch in. So I'm very much in favor of the earnings tax. You can go to www.together-kc.com to see the broad coalition of support across the aisle, across public and private sectors, employers and unions. I think it's just it's something we all got to team up on and realize is the right thing to do.
What was that website again?
It's together-kc.com.
Okay, thank you. I didn't know about that. I appreciate knowing that information.
I talked to the firefighters today, and I just learned about it myself.
Yeah, okay. Great, thank you.
Well, Wes, we just have about 1 minute left. In January, the Missouri minimum wage increased to $10.30. This was because the voters passed a petition initiative that will eventually take it to $13 an hour. In the 45 seconds we have left, is there anything in the legislature to place changes on the minimum wage?
There are a couple of things filed, but they haven't been referred. One is from the budget chairman that would tie minimum wage to the federal minimum wage and then do cost of living adjustments off of that. So that's a little bit concerning, but nothing's been referred. I think we'll be okay. And with the last couple of seconds, I just want to say, one, how much we miss Judy Morgan in the House of Representatives. It was
thank you.
So great to learn from her. And two, her replacement, Emily Weber, is doing a great job. So
thank you. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Wes, for coming on the show and informing us what's happening in Jeff City. We really appreciate it. And after the break, we'll be talking to Kansas State Senator Tom Holland, who will tell us what's happening in Kansas.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Hi, everyone. This is Bill Sundahl. I just want to let folks know our thank you gifts for our 2021 Winter Fun Drive. Every single donor will get a 10-pack of 3-ply masks made right here in KC by Contour MD that were gifted to KKFI. And we've got for $7.50 monthly or 91 time a KKFI Frisbee. For $10 monthly or 121 time gift, a pair of KKFI sunglasses. And for $15 monthly or 181 time a KKFI boat tote. Boat is not included. And for $20 monthly or 251 time a KKFI combo pack, which is the glasses, the Frisbee, and the tote bag. We also have the guest DJ certificate for $12.50 monthly or 151 time. So if you make that call, 888-931-0901. Again, that's 888-931-0901. Or go online at kkfi.org. All the thank you gifts are there. We certainly appreciate your support. Thank you to everyone who's given during this fun drive and all of our monthly sustainers. We appreciate you. Again, that's 888-931-0901 or kkfi.org.
And this is Judy, and we know you're out there listening. All you labor brothers and sisters, give us a call, 888-931-0901, and support your friendly local labor radio show.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, they better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a change. Come writers and critics who prophesize with your...
Welcome back to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Morgan, former Missouri State Rep and retired president of the AFT Local 691. It's a pleasure to be doing this show with my co-host, Tom Gipkin, a member of the Communication Workers of America, Local 6360. I'm pleased to introduce Senator Tom Holland, a member of the Democratic Party who represents Kansas State Senate District 3, which includes parts of Douglas and Leavenworth counties. Senator Holland resides in Baldwin City with his spouse, Barbara Holland, and they are the proud parents of 4 adult children and 3 grandchildren. Before assuming office as a Kansas State Senator in 2009, Senator Holland served in the Kansas House of Representatives from 2003 to 2009. He just won re-election to the Kansas State Senate in November of 2020, and his current term runs through January 2025. Senator Holland has the distinction of being the ranking Democrat on 4 committees in the Kansas Senate: Assessment and Taxation, Commerce, Select Committee on Federal Tax Code Implementation, and Joint Committee on Information Technology. He also has served as a Minority Caucus Chair and Minority Whip. In addition, Senator Holland works as owner and president of Holland Technologies Incorporated. Senator Holland, welcome to KKFI this evening, and thank you for being with us.
Well, Judy, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate being on your show this evening.
Sure. I was wondering if first you could describe more specifically the geographic region you represent in Kansas for listeners who aren't as familiar with your area.
Sure, be happy to. So basically, I represent, as you said, portions of 2 counties. The most populous portion of my district is in Douglas County. And if anybody is familiar with basically Douglas County, particularly the city of Lawrence, pretty much if you look at 23rd Street, Clinton Parkway, that's pretty the north-south dividing line of my district. Senator Marcy Francisco, she pretty much represents everybody in Douglas County north of 23rd Street, Clinton Parkway. I pretty much represent everybody south of that line. My district then shoots south. I pick up Baldwin City. I pick up Eudora. And then basically it skirts up along Harper Street, the east side of that, all the way up in Northeast Lawrence across the river. And then I pretty much represent everything in rural Leavenworth County, outside of the two major cities of Leavenworth and Lansing. So everything in Leavenworth County, west of Leavenworth and Lansing, I cover that as well too.
That's a big area. Well, thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Tom to ask you a question.
Hello, Tom. Kansas has been right to work for many years. Labor's worked hard to improve the conditions of many working people in Kansas. Are there any bills in the legislature that would improve the working conditions for unions, or are there any bills placing more restrictions on union members?
Well, Tom, I appreciate the question. You know, I've been in the legislature for a number of years now, starting my 19th session. And particularly when Mr. Brownback assumed power, Sam Brownback, he was elected governor. And by the way, here's a little political historical tidbit. I actually ran against Mr. Brownback for governor back in 2010, and he thoroughly demolished me. But anyway, the point is that once Mr. Brownback got into office, we saw a lot of anti-union basically legislation basically work its way through the legislature. A lot of the what I would call the Bill Mills, you know, for the Americans for Prosperity, those type of national corporate groups, looking to pin the ears back on hardworking union folks and their locals. Since Mr. Brownback has been gone, that has subsided. And for this year, at least on the Senate side, I can actually report that I don't really see anything particularly, you know, singling out unions at this point. Not to say there won't be something rear its ugly head later on, but nothing so far, at least on the Senate side.
That's good news. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Medicaid expansion, Senator Holland. I've read that that's one of your values, to provide Medicaid for those low-income Kansas citizens who can't afford health insurance. And I read an interesting article from about a year ago on the Topeka Capital Journal that reported 76 Kansas Catholic nuns had signed a letter to Kansas legislators urging them to pass Medicaid expansion as a desperately needed life-saving benefit for suffering Kansas. So I've got a two-part question. Why is Medicaid expansion so important to you as a legislator? And prior to this year's session, what actions has the Kansas legislature taken to pass Medicaid expansion?
Well, no, that's a great question, Judy. You know, and just so everybody understands, I mean, my background, I'm a small business owner, an entrepreneur, and one of the reasons why I serve on the Commerce and Tax Committees is because of my orientation, basically wanting to make Kansas a place where basically both families and businesses, you know, can thrive and prosper. And I have always believed, back to my days as a small business owner, you know, trying to provide health insurance. My wife and I, we have our IT company. You know, we tried at one point to try to afford to provide health care for employees. We simply couldn't afford it. I mean, there's no way we could do that. And so I firmly believe that we talk about building, you know, a healthy ecosystem for families and companies here in Kansas. A major tenet of that healthy infrastructure is, you know, health care for our workers. And I don't think, I truly believe that is a right. It's too bad our federal government has not yet stepped up to provide that the way it should. I'm hopeful because maybe the COVID pandemic, and maybe it'll be an opportunity for the Biden administration, the Congress, to basically, you know, take Obamacare, or quite honestly, some sort of a national healthcare program, and really have that work its way into our populace. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is that so many working families are just one, you know, healthcare disaster away from bankruptcy. And not to have the supports in place, you know, so that family can focus on basically providing on either, you know, if not, you know, bringing home bread to feed the family, then basically getting well and being able to get well. You know, that's not, that should be the burden of the employer. That should be basically, you know, our government's burden is based to provide that minimal level of health care so that basically that family can have an opportunity to not only survive, but thrive.
And so I know there's been some effort in the Kansas legislature to pass Medicaid expansion through a law. And there, I know you've made some progress, but haven't quite gotten there yet. So could you kind of tell our listeners what steps the legislature has taken in the past to pass Medicaid expansion? And also, how many Kansans would it cover if you were able to, if you were able to get it passed?
Well, so first of all, you know, we really, I hate to say it, but the legislature is kind of, you know, it is, I thought if we were going to do it, we would have done it probably the last term. The problem is now is that basically we lost a lot of moderate Democrats and the, moderate Republicans in the primaries back in August 2020. And what we have now basically is we're back to conservative supermajorities in both the Senate and the House. And so, you know, we don't have, because we're unable to back up Governor Kelly's vetoes, we really don't have any sort of negotiating tool or bargaining chip to try to put Medicaid expansion back on the table. Now, there is kind of an interesting history to this, is that last year in 2020, Kansas got wrapped around the axle, you know, in abortion politics. Mm-hmm. And last year, I mean, we had at that time President Susan Wagle, Senate President Susan Wagle, mm-hmm. was running for the U.S. Senate, and later she dropped out. But the point is that her big thing was is basically mm-hmm. trying to put this value, so-called value them both anti-abortion amendment, unconstitutional amendment on the ballot. And we lost we lost a good portion of the 2020 legislative session with COVID. But we also lost it to her, just her single fixation on this amendment. And basically the talking point given by Kansans for Life and others against Medicaid expansion is that they were making the proposition that a vote for Medicaid expansion is a vote for public funding of abortion.
Yeah.
And that's just simply not the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, people look at other states that have Medicaid expansion. Florida is a great example. Florida, they have that, and yet their Supreme Court has explicitly ruled that basically taxpayers will not fund abortion in that state. So this whole argument by Kansans for Life has been a real red herring as far as why, you know, we can't have a Medicaid expansion in this state, and it's just a darn shame.
And I know in Missouri, you probably are aware that we just passed Medicaid expansion via a ballot initiative, but you all don't actually have that ability in Kansas, right, for the initiative.
Well, Judy, that is correct, but I'll also let you know that I and a couple other senators actually introduced the Citizen Ballot Initiative this year because, quite honestly, the Republican Senate leadership and in the House as well, too. I mean, they are clueless. They are so wedded to the special interests. And, you know, citizens are getting sick of it. We have a tax policy in Kansas that I basically liken to a Conestoga wagon. And we really need to have a Ford F-150. We have a lot of, quite honestly, rural interests that drive the state of Kansas. When you look at the state, Northeast Kansas, by 2030, it's going to be over 50% of the state's entire population. Mm-hmm. And we just don't have tax policies and budget policies that really reflect the rapid shift in demographics within the state as well as what's going out.
Governor Kelly has discussed publicly a way to fund the expansion of Medicaid by allowing medical marijuana. What do you think the chances of this making it through the legislature and to the governor's desk are?
Well, one or both.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on medical marijuana?
First of all, you know, I 2 years ago, I introduced the Veterans First Medical Cannabis Act. I mean, I think medical cannabis is going to go. And keep in mind, I have a very Republican district. Joe Biden lost my district by over 1,300 votes. I won my district by like 990. So I have a lot of Republicans that vote for me. But I will tell you the medical cannabis issue, I mean, that is something that's very broad-based in popularity.
Yeah.
And people want it. And honestly, conservative Republicans have been a big hindrance to date in getting that passed. And I think they realize they got to get off the dime and get that done. Now, from the standpoint, if we can link that, if we can use that as an argument to get other conservative Republicans off the fence, because now, you know, they've always said, well, you know, we can't afford it. You know, we need to be spending our money on other things. If that is a argument to successfully get them to support both medical cannabis and, you know, Medicaid expansion, that's great. We'll see what happens, but I hope we can link those, but please understand, I think there's a strong drive to get medical cannabis done in the state with or without the Medicaid expansion. I hope we can link those, but, I think the medical cannabis is going to get legs up by itself regardless.
Okay. We're talking with Kansas State Senator Tom Holland about what is happening in the Kansas legislature. Senator Holland, I read a February 1st article in the KC Star that stated Kansas lawmakers in Topeka weighed eliminating the Secretary of State's power to extend deadlines for the delivery of mail ballots, a tool that ensures votes still count, even in an emergency that disrupts an election. Could you comment on this bill and where you stand on it? And do you see this as an effort to suppress voting or make it more difficult to vote in your state?
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, after Trump's shenanigans leading up to the January 6th riots, I think it's pretty obvious to everybody across the country that you have basically those Republican-controlled legislatures, particularly if they have the Secretary of State's office sewn up, is that basically they're looking to legally suppress those voters that don't vote Republican. I mean, that's part of their business model. You know, whether we all want to admit that or not, I mean, to me, this smacks of kind of the same thing. Now, I really think that one of the things we need to focus on is I really think we averted a near miss when it comes to basically a coup of, you know, Mr. Trump and his supporters overtaking our government. And I think one thing we need to look at as a legislator, all legislators across this country, is the fact that, you know, our democracy is fragile, and we need to basically look at those things and say, what do we need to do to basically give people the confidence that regardless of how they vote, you know, their attorney general, their congressional delegation is basically going to play like, you know, they buy into the next big lie and basically would just, you know, take action to just, you know, jeopardize, disenfranchise their voice at the ballot box. And so I think this is real serious stuff, and as far as January 6th go, my feeling is that I think the tendency for violence, I don't think that's gone anywhere. I mean, I've actually become so concerned that I actually started carrying myself in the Kansas legislature. That's the only place I carry, but I mean, that's where I do carry, because we look at basically the security risks of, you know, somebody that could actually get into that building, not through the front entrance, through the metal detectors. I mean, you know, through a side door, or through a window or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we are vulnerable. And unfortunately, I mean, I think every Democrat, Republican in all 50 state houses, we're exposed now. And we got to basically, I think, address some of those issues.
Okay, thank you. I think Tom has one more question.
This one's about vaccinations. Vaccinations have been a kind of hit and miss in the states across the country. In the minute and a half we have left, would you discuss how Kansas is doing with the vaccine rollout?
Well, Kansas has had a troublesome time in basically getting its reporting and tracking systems, my understanding, to actually reflect what's going on. You know, according to some systems, the way the information is publicized, it would appear that basically there's more available vaccines to go into arms than there actually are. And so what's happening is that the reporting systems either, you know, they're not filling out the fields correctly on the screens, or, you know, there's not a good handoff between, you know, people shelving vaccines from one group to the next. And so, you know, they've got some reporting problems right now. They're still trying to work through, and they'll get that figured out. The problem with the whole vaccine distribution thing is that, you know, President Trump, you know, I do give him credit for the warp speed. know, they did get a, you know, help get the vaccines developed, but the problem is there was never any plan for distribution. In fact, you saw a major, you know, change in the so-called plan, you know, January 12th, you know, before Biden even took office. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the governors, you know, God bless them, have not had much room to work with, and just kind of, you know, react to things on the fly. And we're suffering from that. And I think we'll continue to do so for some time. There is an interesting bill, though, just real quick. Speaking of vaccines, there's a Senate Bill 213, which basically is trying to have it so that an employee cannot be basically lose his or her work because they refuse to get vaccinated if an employer required a vaccination on the job. And that's going to make some very interesting debates in our legislature. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Okay. We've been talking to Senator Tom Holland, who serves the 3rd Senate District in the Kansas Legislature. Senator Holland, thank you so much for coming on our show tonight. And thank you to all the listeners who have been listening to our show tonight.
Judy, Tom, I appreciate it and look forward to the opportunity to discuss with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Kansas City. This is Angie Williams with my last edition of Know Your Rights. Starting on March 1st, I'm happy to announce that I will be joining the Western District of Missouri Federal Public Defender's Office. But that means that I'm leaving private practice and I will also be leaving this radio spot. I just want everybody to know who has listened to me over the past several years that it has been an honor to get on the radio once a month and talk with you all about various legal issues that are facing Missouri and Kansas citizens today. I will very much miss being a part of the radio station, but hope that you guys continue to listen to the Heartland Labor Forum for as long as it's on the airwaves, because it's a fantastic show. So, for my last broadcast here, I thought I'd talk about something that's happening close to home, and that is some bills that are being proposed in the state of Missouri that would make a lot of activity related to protesting specifically, but this also could be used against people who are not protesting. And this bill proposes to make a lot of this stuff illegal. So let's dive into this. This is Senate Bill number 26, and you can read the text of the entire bill online on the Missouri legislature's. So essentially, the bill creates a variety of different violations. And so let's just start with the first one. The first new violation is something that they're calling unlawful traffic interference. And this happens if, with the intention to impede vehicular traffic, any person walks, stands, sits, kneels, lays, or places an object in such a manner as to block the passage of a vehicle on a public street, highway, or interstate highway. Now, a first offense of unlawful traffic interference, and this is just like one person doing one of these things, is going to be a Class A misdemeanor. A second violation of the same thing, so not we're not talking protest yet, we're still just talking one person blocking or impeding traffic. A second subsequent violation is going to be a Class E felony. Now, this applies to activities of blocking traffic on a public street or a highway, but not an interstate highway. That's going to be something different. We'll talk about that in just a second. If an unlawful interference with traffic happens on a highway, on the other hand, it's going to be a Class E felony for a first violation. Again, this is just one person doing something to impede traffic on an interstate highway. The statute also gives a sentence that the court has to impose. For a first-time violation doing this on a highway, the court must impose a suspended imposition of sentence and a term of supervised probation for 5 years, 100 hours of community service, and a fine that doesn't exceed $750. Okay. So the various things you can do just as one person if you're blocking or impeding traffic. Unlawful traffic interference on a public street or highway that isn't an interstate highway is going to be a Class A misdemeanor for a first time and a Class E felony for a second time. If you're blocking traffic and you're just an individual person on interstate highway, the first time is going to be a Class E felony and will have a mandatory sentence of 5 years probation, 100 hours of community service, and a fine of not more than $750. Now, this also creates another category. It's still unlawful traffic interference on a public street, highway, or interstate highway, but this is while part of an unlawful assembly. So this is what they're going to use, or that people are afraid they're going to use against protesters. And that is going to start at a Class D felony. Again, the mandatory hours, sentence is going to be the same thing for the Class E felony, 5 years of probation, 100 hours of community service, and a fine not to exceed a little bit higher, $1,000. So these are newly proposed laws that are aimed very specifically at protesters. Now, anybody that's practiced criminal law in the Kansas City area may be familiar with a type of a ticket that happens in Kansas City called walking in the street where a sidewalk has been provided. My fear as a defense attorney is that these type of laws are going to be selectively enforced and applied more harshly to the communities of color that we have here in Kansas City, just like the walking in the street where a sidewalk is provided. These are common charges that I see on defendants that I have represented, and they are disproportionately, I'm not going to say exclusively, but I will say almost exclusively given to people of color. Now, this, of course, leads to a whole bunch of other things that are caught, that are the root of the systematic racism that is part of our system. So I am not in favor of this particular law. And I think that if you are a person that is involved in these things, that this might be a good time to start calling and emailing your state representatives about this, because this is going to be a disaster. Now, sadly, that's all the time I have now. And Kansas City, it has been my great privilege to talk with you every month for the last few years. But this is Angie Williams with the Law Offices of Angela L. Williams, signing off on my very last edition of Know Your Rights. Be safe, Kansas City.
And thank you to Angie Williams for all her service to the Heartland Labor Forum. I also want to thank some people who helped us make the match and made some contributions. John Du Bois, Lon Swearingen, and our own Jen Zaman. Thank you. We don't have time for the calendar. It's on our Facebook page. Just look for the Heartland Labor Forum Facebook page. Next week on the Heartland Labor Forum, an interview with Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. And India's Millions March Against Corporatization of Agriculture. The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman.